It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is the Fox News Rundown Extra. I'm Chris Foster. O.J. Simpson's dead. Not quite 30 years since the murders he was found not guilty of committing. His ex-wife, Nicole Brown, and her friend, Ron Goldman's. The headline of his obituary would have been Football Hall of Famer dead, with his acting and broadcasting career mentioned a paragraph or two later, probably. Instead, the talk is more about the murders and the most watched televised trial in American history. Fox News legal analyst Greg Jarrett covered it back then. We brought him in to talk about his memories of the case and Simpson's spectacular rise and fall. The conversation was too long to include in the regular weekday podcast and radio show, so we include it here for you now. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Now, Greg Jarrett on the Fox News Rundown Extra. Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst and a veteran of the OJ Wars. Initial reaction to his death?
Well, you know, I'm sort of reminded not of OJ Simpson, but of the two people that I always believed, without question, that he murdered, Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. And my thoughts and prayers go out, as they always have, to their survivors. You know, this was a terrible tragedy in so many ways. O.J. Simpson was this iconic football player. You know, he set all kinds of records, Heisman Trophy winner, first pick in the NFL draft, set, you know, the rushing record. 2,000 yards in the NFL. And he went on to become, you know, a pitchman for Hertz and, you know, other products, an actor in movies. And, you know, he had this wonderful life from a hardscrabble upbringing to immense popular success and financial success as well.
Looking back... Go ahead, Greg.
But, you know... His life spiraled out of control, and you know, O.J. Simpson, you know, forced his own undoing.
Looking back at that time and thinking about Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown Simpson, do you, looking back on it to me retroactively, now it seems almost distasteful, the publicity around that trial, and it turned into a soap opera, and you know. People, there were jokes about it, and I wonder if it would be covered exactly the same way now.
You know, I don't know. Maybe it would. I covered it for 9 months live in Los Angeles at the courthouse for Court TV, and it was gavel-to-gavel coverage every day of the trial. And this, really, for a great many Americans, was their first exposure to, you know, the workings of an actual murder trial, warts and all, the failures of the prosecution, the success of the defense, the poor decisions made, I thought, by Judge Lance Ito, who presided over the case. And, you know, unless Americans actually watched the trial, and tens of millions did each and every day, you know, I think they would have maybe come to different conclusions. You know, when you hear it secondhand by reading about it in the newspaper or hearing reports about it, it's not the same thing of actually watching witnesses testifying and judging their credibility, looking at the physical evidence that was presented inside the courtroom. To truly understand a trial and make a decision on your own, you have to actually watch it. So I've always been a proponent of cameras in the courtroom.
Speaking of warts and all, that an 11-month trial, do you think that it's fair, the criticism of the prosecution, that they overcomplicated this case beyond just the simple mistakes like having him try on a glove that apparently didn't fit or he pretended it didn't fit?
Yeah, I mean, so many mistakes were made by the prosecution. And I fault Chris Darden and Marcia Clark, the two principal prosecutors. They thought that this case could be easily proven. But they failed in many ways in their proof. They took witnesses for granted, didn't prepare them properly. They, you know, underestimated the skill of Johnny Cochran and Robert Shapiro and Peter Neufeld and Barry Scheck and, you know, the so-called dream team. And, you know, I think they only have themselves to blame. But there were other factors here. Judge Lancito completely lost control of the case. This is a case that should have taken no more than 6 weeks to try. And it actually took 9 months. You said 11. That includes some of the pretrial hearings. But in earnest, from opening statements to verdict, it took 9 months. That was absurd. And again, Lancito lost control. He allowed the defense to introduce utterly irrelevant, wild theories. And you have to remember that I grew up in Los Angeles. I know it quite well. At the time that of the criminal trial in 1995, Los Angeles was this cauldron of racial unrest, distrust of police officers. And when the elected DA, Gil Garcetti, sent the case away from where the crime occurred in Santa Monica to downtown Los Angeles, I shook my head and said, that is a huge mistake. I'd tried cases in downtown Los Angeles. Jurors there hate cops. And this was a cop case. They distrusted science and DNA, which was new at the time. And I think if this criminal case had been tried in Santa Monica, where the civil case was eventually held, the verdict would have been completely different.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Obviously, the racial divide, still to this day, not quite as deeply if you look at polls, but still it's there. There were celebrations among some African Americans when he got off. And there were just, it was just jaw-dropping disbelief among probably most white Americans. Just the shock on one hand and the celebration on the other was just so stark.
Yeah, and the polling data showed that. The vast majority of African Americans polled after the verdict agreed with it. The vast majority of white people did not. And you know, that has changed over the years. A majority of African Americans polled not long ago now agree that O.J. Simpson got away with two murders. You know, the wisdom of time has changed their opinions and their attitudes. But, you know, this was a case in which I think in the end justice was not done. I've covered hundreds of trials in my 40-year career as a journalist. And I was inside the courtroom every day or outside on the platform covering it live via television. And I've never seen such overwhelming evidence of guilt. And yet the jury would not accept it. It was a classic case of jury nullification. I mean, the blood of O.J. Simpson was dripping away from the bodies to the back of the home where his Ford Bronco was parked. The blood of the victims were on the outside of his Ford Bronco and smeared and splattered on the inside of his vehicle. Their blood was found on his socks in his bedroom at his home. Their blood was found on a glove at the back of his property, and the matching glove had been dropped at the scene of the crime. I mean, this is incontrovertible, irrefutable evidence. And yet, you know, Barry Scheck, and he's a fine lawyer, I thought he was using smoke and mirrors to try to deceive the jury.
And, you know, Greg, for all we were told, all that blood was planted by people that were just out to get a successful black man.
Yeah, I mean, that was the other crazy part of it. It was utterly ludicrous that the defense argued that the glove at the back of Simpson's property was planted by police, that the blood inside the vehicle, the Ford Bronco, was planted by police, that the blood on the gate at Simpson's home was planted by police, that the blood on the socks was planted by police. Completely absurd. No right-minded person would ever believe it. And yet Johnny Cochran was so persuasive. And one of the pivotal moments in the trial came when Chris Darden, goaded by the famed defense attorney F. Lee Bailey, was a part of the Dream Team. Bailey taunted Darden into having Simpson try on the glove. And I mean, it was one of the dumbest decisions I've ever seen a lawyer make. And sure enough, you know, the gloves are handed to O.J. Simpson, and he, you know, he struggles to try to put them on and sort of pretends that they don't fit. And in some ways they didn't fit. Why? Because they'd been soaked in blood and then they'd been frozen and unfrozen. So they'd shrunk.
Right.
So, you know, that of course led to the famous line in closing arguments by Johnny Cochran. It was a brilliant line from a defense standpoint. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit. And the jurors grabbed onto that, and that was their excuse.
Yeah. So after the trial, Nicole Brown Simpson's family's and Ron Goldman's family, they sued in a civil trial. Different standards, but like, and also, like you said, it was tried in a different jurisdiction. They won $33.5 million. I don't know how much they ever ended up receiving.
Very little they received.
Yeah, and they. The Goldman family, I know, won the rights to Simpson's book that he had written and that he said he had nothing to do with. It was as close as you can get to a confession without being a confession. And he says, well, that was a ghostwriter. I had nothing to do with it. And then they retitled the book, you know, I Did It, Confessions of a Killer.
Yeah, If I Did It, I think was, you know.
Yeah.
But he, you know, it basically laid out how he did it. You know, look, he evaded the $33 million judgment against him by moving to Florida, where his pension and his home was protected by homestead laws and other statutes. So in the end, he even got away with that. But, you know, it was a dramatically different trial, the civil trial in Santa Monica. O.J. Simpson no longer had a Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination. He was forced to testify. Nobody believed the story that he was telling because there was too much evidence with which he was confronted. His best friend, you know, Al Cowlings, was forced to testify and confirmed the years of physical abuse and harassment and stalking by O.J. Simpson of Nicole Brown Simpson. There were photographs of her bruised and battered face, that O.J. Simpson had relentlessly beaten her in the years before he killed her. All of this was powerful evidence, and it was easy for the jury to find O.J. Simpson liable for $33 million. But, you know, it's a far cry from spending the rest of your life behind bars. Although, you know, Ronald Goldman's father told me something interesting after the criminal trial. He said, you watch, O.J. Simpson will end up behind bars. And for different crimes, he eventually did.
Yeah, 2007, arrested for armed robbery and kidnapping. Not one of those kidnapping charges where he actually, you know, snatched somebody, but he held somebody against their will in an attempt to get back the sports memorabilia that he says was stolen. Sentenced to 33 years, ended up serving 9. Any sense that this was a make-good verdict and a make-good sentence?
Yeah, it might have been. I don't contest that. I mean, there's no question that he committed some crimes, but for his getting away with murder in Los Angeles, I don't think that, you know, as many crimes he would have been convicted of in Nevada or received the kind of punishment he did. But he ended up spending, I think, what was it, 9 years behind bars?
Yeah.
But, you know, small price to pay for his larger crimes.
And for people who are, there are plenty of people now who are young enough to not remember just that year of that year of OJ. And then before that, just how famous he was. He was one of the most recognized people in the world and just and admired and beloved.
Yeah, my two daughters who were in their 20s were not born yet. And so they have no idea. I think I once mentioned O.J. Simpson in passing, and they had no clue who he was, what he had done, or that I had covered the trial back in 1995. He was such a famous guy. And his story, his life story, was really quite remarkable. Before the trial began, I traveled to San Francisco, where I'd lived for a decade, and I went to his neighborhood. He grew up with his best friend, Al Cowlings, in the projects, an area of San Francisco that, you know, very run down, very crime ridden. It was a tough life. And to survive, I mean, you had to fight your way through it. And yet he had this wonderful personality that was so engaging. And it translated into television. You know, he joined Monday Night Football after his career. And as you and I talked about, he was a pitchman for Hertz and other products because he was so immensely popular. And he transcended issues of race. He famously said, I'm not black, I'm OJ. And you know, there was an element of truth to that. You know, everybody liked him. Everybody loved him. And yet he had these demons.
O.J. Simpson, dead at the age of 76, give or take. He lived about 41 years longer than his ex-wife, about 51 years longer than Ron Goldman. Thanks, Greg.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.